Welcome to the Payments and Cards podcast. Today on the show, we have Todd Clyde, the newly appointed CEO of Token. Token, as you've probably heard, is one of, if not the world's most exciting open banking fintechs at the moment. Big operations in San Francisco and London, growing like crazy everywhere. Big plans for a rollout across Europe. You'll find Todd is extremely incisive and articulate with all issues regarding open banking. I think you'll find this podcast extremely informative. Enjoy the show. Okay, today on the show, we have Todd Clyde, CEO of Token. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Great. Thank you, Lewis. Thank you for having me.
Okay, it's great to get you on the show so soon. I understand there was a leadership change at Token quite recently. You've recently stepped into the top position, so that's fantastic news. Congratulations on that. Before we start looking at Token and some of your new responsibilities there, Todd, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. So name is Todd Clyde. Been in the software industry for 33 years, 12 years with Accenture. And then for the last 22 years, I've been living the dream of working at startups and bringing new technologies to market. Three of those were in the digital channels areas for banks. So one was dealing with internet banking, one was dealing with mobile banking, and now Token, which is dealing with API-based banking. Been able to successfully lead the previous four companies to an exit, and joined our founder, Steve Kirsch, here when I really heard his vision about modernizing payments. And when I learned more about the disruptions that were happening in open banking. So, and recently relocated to London with the company. So I've been living full time in London for about a year and a half.
Okay. And how are you finding London so far?
I love it. It's always been my favorite city in the world. So having a wonderful time here.
That's fantastic. And I suppose you were in San Francisco primarily before London.
Yeah, for the last 20 years, counted San Francisco my home, and those four previous companies were all startups based in San Francisco.
Okay, fantastic. And sorry if I sound a bit like a fanboy, Todd, but is it true that one of your previous exits exited for the princely sum of $2 billion?
Yeah, that was my first one. It was an e-learning company, but again, half of our business was really related to internet banking. It was in the dot-com days, but we grew extremely quickly. And yes, when we went public, we were valued for a while at $2.2
billion. Amazing. Incredible. So certainly smart of Steve Kirsch to bring you into the business and to give you the reins, as it were. So before we start looking at Token, can you please introduce the company to us? What is Token? What does it do?
Yeah, so it's a software company started in San Francisco, focused, all of our commercial operations are focused in London. So we have about 25 in San Francisco, 25 in London. Founded by Steve Kirsch that you mentioned. He's really a serial entrepreneur. He holds the patent on the optical mouse. He was the inventor of FrameMaker, which was sold to Adobe, the inventor of InfoSeek, which was the search engine of Yahoo. And really his vision was to modernize payments in a bank-friendly way and make a bank payment to be as simple as a credit card payment. About Token in general, I'd say we exist to change the way you consume your financial services. Rather than walking into a bank or logging into your internet banking or mobile banking, you know, in the very near future, these traditional banking services are going to be delivered directly in the apps that I use on a daily basis, providing the service that I need in the context that I need it when I need it. And this is all going to be made possible through APIs and through this regulation called open banking or PSD2. And Token basically exists to help change the way we consume those services. We do so by providing a software platform for open banking. And we provide software for banks or an API platform for banks that helps them comply with this new regulation, but also just to create new premium payment capabilities and data capabilities that could be fed directly into their customers' applications. And then we also provide software for those applications, or under the regulation, it's called third parties. And we provide software for them that makes it really easy to access every bank and makes it really easy to start consuming data from banks and accepting payments from banks and basically embedding financial services directly into their app.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. That's a great introduction to the company. And I suppose the next best question is, since Token's entire business model seems more or less embedded in or even dependent on open banking and PSD2, what would you say is the current state of readiness among banks and third parties to interact with a company like Token? How ready is the market for what you're offering?
It's been a really interesting journey from the time this regulation called PSD2 was being considered 5 years ago. I'd say the bank's first reaction was fear, you know, that they were going to become disintermediated. They would be forced to open up access to their crown jewels and would be at a risk for the big techs and fintechs. You know, but since then, all the banks have complied. So the regulation was really a catalyst. And now banks are beginning to think, you know, how do we actually generate new streams of revenue in this new open banking world? So that's context. You know, in the UK has been leading the way. They had the first deadline by which the large banks should be live. And that deadline was January of 2018.
Hey, this is Jonathan from Block Data. FYI, 40% of big companies will invest at least $5 million into blockchain initiatives this year. Block Data helps these companies understand what's going on through market intelligence on the blockchain ecosystem. If you'd like to find out more, just Google Block Data.
And, you know, it took a while for banks to come online with APIs. It took a very long time for the APIs to stabilize. But now, you know, banks are providing services through APIs. Third parties, this is merchants and fintechs and payment service providers, are starting to embed these services within their apps. And in the UK, there is now 100 million transactions flowing per month, and it's growing at about 30% per month. So I'd say in the UK, it's happening, it's live, it's here, it's going to be changing the way we consume financial services. Europe had a much later deadline. So Europe's deadline for the regulation, PSD2, was September 14th. So just less than a month ago, All the banks were supposed to be live. And it's looking like about half have missed that deadline, and only about one third are actually accessible in production. But that's pretty much the same pattern as the UK. So I expect, you know, all the banks to come online within the next 3 or 4 months. I expect APIs to take some time to stabilize. But just like in the UK, we expect the third party starting to sign up, starting to embed these new financial services into their applications, and transactions starting to flow. So it's no longer speculative. It's no longer, is this going to happen? You know, it's here, transactions are happening. And I think as consumers, we will start to see a change in our lives starting very soon in how we interact with our banks and how we consume those services.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear that the UK has had the drop on the rest of Europe for over a year now. Without going on too much of a tangent, why do you think the UK was well placed to implement PSD2, you know, almost a year and a half sooner than the rest of Europe?
Well, there was really a convergence of two issues. In the UK, there's always been a very an environment to try to promote competition to banks. You know, there's been a lot of concern over overdraft fees As you know, there's been efforts to try to promote ease of switching between banks. So there was kind of an anti-competitive fervor amongst banks. And so in the UK, they were really looking to force the banks to open up access, to foster greater competition, to allow more innovation by third parties, and to provide more consumer choice. Really, in parallel with this, PSD2 was starting to happen. And that kind of came out of the European Banking Authority as a way to counteract screen scraping and legacy ways of accessing banks. And how do we monetize that? It was very related to GDPR. How do we give consumers control over their data held within banks? And so it was really the convergence of these two streams, and the UK was really on the front foot. And then they said, great, we're going to align our efforts to promote anti-competitive behavior within banks, or to prevent anti-competitive behavior within banks. And so they really just were kind of already moving, and they mandated their banks had to be compliant with this new request, and then with the payment service directive number 2, a full year and a half earlier before the deadline of the regulation. And so it was really that reason, the convergence of these two different initiatives that were going on.
That's very interesting. And that's completely new to me. I didn't know that there was this kind of anti-competitive requirement for the UK regulators that nicely converged with this, let's say, technological upgrade. You know, coming together in the form of PSD2. Do you think that the UK will be in a position to take advantage of their year and a half drop on the market in the rest of Europe? Are you already seeing some advantages coming to fruition that puts you in good stead versus some of your European competition?
Yes, I think the benefit to banks in the UK will be that given they have been live for a year and a half with basic compliance, they are figuring out earlier than European banks how to make money at this. Mm. So as mentioned, every UK bank, their first response was fear of disintermediation. Then it was frustration and being overwhelmed with the effort to actually comply. You know, then it was relief. How do they, you know, now that they have complied? And now all of them are really saying, okay, how do we not just be a provider of information to this new fintech layer that this will enable? How do we actually compete for a position in this new fintech layer and actually consume services from other banks? So, you know, we're seeing banks now start to say, how do I offer my lending products at the point of sale in e-commerce transactions? How do I bring new payment propositions to my corporates that has all the data and ease of reconciliation and benefits of a card-based payment, but is dramatically cheaper and has the economics of a bank payment? So I think banks will benefit in the UK by a head start by figuring out what their offensive proposition will be in response to open banking. You know, for fintechs and for big tech that are also trying to compete for that financial layer, I think the UK is really their test bed. You know, they've got access to all banks. There's 48 registered with the Open Banking Authority here. And you see new propositions coming live every day that are accepting payment, you know, bringing a new type of payment, leveraging access to data for credit risk decisioning, offering new multi-banking types of offerings where I can see my holdings across all banks within one location. So that's what's in it for the banks to have a head start to get ahead. And what's in it for fintechs and for big tech and for consumers is we really get to be the early adopters and early innovators of the new types of capabilities that this will power.
Yep. This segues nicely into my next question, and you've certainly touched on it a little bit already, but maybe you can give us a few more examples. What are the initial use cases and benefits of open banking? What are we all going to get out of this stuff in the longer term?
Yeah, so initially, we're limited by what the regulation can support and by what we can imagine. So the regulation requires the banks to give consent for a third party to access my data for up to 90 days and the ability for me to execute a single immediate payment on behalf of a merchant or beneficiary. So within the confines of those constraints, we are seeing initial use cases. And so on the data side, 99% of all traffic right now is data related. The most prevalent use case is simplifying the loan application process or simplifying the credit decisioning process. So let's say I'm applying for a mortgage or another loan. In the past, I had to provide 6 months of bank statements, get them notarized, deliver them. They had to be manually reviewed. Now the lender can simply connect to my bank account and pull all that information automatically and evaluate it, you know, with artificial intelligence and with just simple automation. And so that's the biggest use case, is really to simplify the risk decisioning process as part of applying for a loan. The second biggest data use case we're seeing is it's called personal financial management. And this is, most banks have launched one, but this is come to my bank, link all your other bank accounts from all your other institutions and see all your balances and transactions in one place. I will give you budgeting tools. I will give you cash flow forecasting tools. And it's kind of, you know, a personal treasury management application just for me to manage my finances. So that's been launched by HSBC and First Data and Lloyds and NatWest and Barclays. And then on the payment side, so again, given that the regulation restricts the type of payment to a single immediate payment at this point, the primary use cases you're seeing is topping up a mobile wallet. So there's all these different mobile wallets that have a stored value that allow you then to do whatever the function of the wallet is, you know, exchange money, make an international remittance. And that top up is typically enabled. If you want to keep the user in your application, you have to allow it to be topped up by a credit card or a debit card or Apple Pay or PayPal. So that mobile wallet is paying the merchant fees. Now you could actually just allow for a top up from within their application or within their wallet by doing a credit transfer from your bank. So dramatically reducing the merchant fees they're paying and still keeping the user with inside the application. And the second most prevalent use case on the payment side is really in support of setting up a direct debit. The first payment is often accepted by credit card. So let's look at the rental property market. Typically, rent is put on a direct debit for the second and subsequent payments, but that first payment is collected by credit cards. And rent is a high transaction value, so the merchant fees being paid by the rental agency is very high. So just simple initial payments topping up of wallets are really the two major payment use cases. But, you know, to me, these are evidence that the market's happening. You know, we have yet to be able to envision what this will enable in the future, but it's starting and we're seeing, you know, real use cases on both the data and the payment side.
I really enjoyed the first example that you gave about having kind of your own treasury application. That sounds very interesting to myself. I've got all sorts of financial services quite dispersed across all sorts of service providers in different countries as well. How long before these sorts of applications will become more mainstream? And do you have any suggestions about current live services of that nature that myself and customers like me could already go and check out?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, they are currently live at being offered as part of a bank's mobile banking or internet banking, and Barclays, First Direct, HSBC, Lloyds, NatWest have all offered them, and I'm sure there'll be more coming online. There are some independent providers out there, a small company called Cashback, bigger company called Yolt. All offer similar capabilities. And, you know, right now they're all going through APIs that are restricted by the regulation. The old way of doing it was going through screen scraping. Mm-hmm. And so it's more restricted to the types of accounts that you could access right now, but obviously the vision would be able to see my pensions, my mortgages, my investments, my current accounts, my savings accounts, my loans, you know, all in one place. And, you know, I think what we're seeing now is definitely the catalyst for that vision to become a reality, you know, within a year, certainly less than 2 years.
I love it. I look forward to it. I think when you know that this is something that could really impact you and alleviate your own, whatever you're dealing with in your own life, it becomes even more interesting. So I'm certainly excited to get my hands on those sorts of services in the near future. So these are some very exciting, very positive use cases. So the next question is, what are some of the barriers? Where are the major difficulties holding up this progress?
Yeah, I would say it's how the banks have implemented the regulation in that they've done it all differently, and the regulation itself. But I do believe that the regulation was the catalyst for open banking or API-based banking to start. And banks will move beyond offering the bare minimum of compliance. But in the detail, so some of the barriers are, so first is it's a very fragmented environment. So think that banks were mandated to open up a front door or put a lock on the front door that could be opened by a third party. Right now, they've all used a different lock and requiring a different key by every third party. So despite having a common standard, every bank built differently, which makes it difficult for trusted third parties to connect individually to each bank. You know, there's a simple solution to that. Companies like Token has done that hard work, and we can give a third party one API to access all banks. So we can give them one master key to open all the different locks that have been implemented by banks. Second major barrier is really, I'm sure your audience has heard about the strong customer authentication that has been a threat to card-based e-commerce and which is a barrier to uptake of open banking payments. So under the regulation, the bank, in the case of a bank payment or access to bank for data, must authenticate the user. In the case of a card payment, the issuing bank must do a strong customer authentication or authenticate the user. And that authentication is being implemented differently by banks and inserting significant friction into the process. So to solve this long-term, there does need to be greater standardization between banks and so that we have a common authentication experience as a consumer. And there's various ways to get there that I won't necessarily go through. But what I would state is it's improving. So when the UK banks went live in early 2018, the authentication experience was horrible. I mean, maybe 6 steps, maybe 12 steps, and there's no way it would ever be used in a payment. But since then, every bank has continued to improve. And there are some banks, you know, such as HSBC, such as N26s, that has just an excellent authentication experience that's even better than a 3D secure on a card-based payment. So really, fragmentation was number one. The friction in the SCA is number two. And the third is just the functionality that's enabled or mandated under the regulation is very limited. So, as I mentioned, it's really limited to a single immediate payment that must be authenticated in real time. So that limits the types of payments to user-initiated, user-present type of transactions. And that only reflects about 10% of the types of payments we do in our lives. But going forward, you know, I also expect that we don't need to wait for the regulation, but banks are moving forward to offer more advanced API capabilities that would support variable recurring payments, future dated payments, installment payments or split payments at the point of sale. And then I believe you'll see that a bank payment can really replace card on file for subscription payments or at billers. You'll see a bank payment being able to replace direct debits. Direct debit is a bank payment, but it's a debit and carries an unlimited liability, takes a little bit longer to settle. You know, a credit transfer through an open banking payment is quick to set up, settles immediately, and does not carry the unlimited liability associated with the direct debit. So I think the solution to the fragmentation is to work with a company like Token to solve the friction and the authentication. Banks are solving it. I do think we'll see government entities try to get a more consistent authentication. And on the limitation of functionality side, banks are moving beyond the bare minimum required by the regulation. Token also provides premium payment APIs that helps banks bring these new capabilities to market and to make money. So those are the barriers, but hopeful, and I see light at the end of the tunnel on each one of these that they're surmountable.
The PCN podcast is brought to you by Payvision. When it comes to payments, Payvision don't mess around. They live and breathe payment processing, from design and integration to delivery and checkout, and everything in between. The dedication to their products shows. That's why they're so happy to support merchants with exactly the kind of payment solutions they're looking for.
I like how you've identified these barriers in detail, and of course, offering solutions or ways of improving or overcoming these barriers. Well, that's precisely what Token does. I mean, that's where it makes its money. That's where it helps the market as a whole. So that's a great deep dive on what those barriers look like. What is the outlook for all of these improvements? How do you think open banking will change our daily lives, you know, 1, 2, 5 years from now?
Yeah. Right now, all we could envision are these simple use cases that I've described. You know, I think one, because that's all that's enabled by the regulation right now. And also, I think that's all we can envision at this point. And I'll draw a couple of analogies that, you know, 5 years from now, these use cases will be obvious, even though we're blind to them or ignorant of them right now. So they're restricted by the regulation. Banks will go beyond the bare minimum of compliance, and API-based banking is here to stay. You know, this quality of API, this quality of supply of data and payments from banks will only improve over time. And then, I draw an analogy. So our founder that I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, he was actually taking classes at MIT as a high schooler, and he wrote the email program for the internet when it was called ARPANET. And all they could imagine of the internet back in the 1980s was that it would be used for file transfer and email. You know, nobody could envision any other use cases. And yet now today, obviously, we couldn't live our lives without it. At the mobile banking company where I was at, so, 2008, pre-smartphones, we were talking about banking services on a phone. And I had a very senior person at a very large bank in the United States say to me, why would anybody want to check their balance on a phone? And, you know, obviously, even just 2 years later, 5 years later, obviously, interacting with your bank, the mobile channel is now the dominant channel. So I share those simply to say we can't yet see the future. But once I can put a bank into every app, the use cases are just going to multiply. It's one other quick analogy. So if you think about 100 years ago, 200 years ago, to bring water into our homes, we used to have to go out to a collection point, you know, a well or a fountain, mm-hmm. a one-time-a-day activity, bring a bucket of water in the house and use it. Then came indoor plumbing. And indoor plumbing didn't just make access to water more convenient, it changed the way we consumed it. It was no longer a one-time-per-day activity. It was point of need. I wanted to wash my hands, you turned it on. I wanted to cook, you turned it on. And that's what's going to happen here with API-based financial services. It's going to change the way we interact with it from a one-time event or once per week event to consuming it right at the point of need, where I need it. And so, you know, like bringing water into homes, change people's lives, you know, bringing financial services into phones is going to dramatically change the way we interact with it. So I'd say get ready. We really don't know all the ways, but given the big techs, given the techs, given the banks are all racing to provide these new services, you know, I think we are going to be seeing the innovation. We are going to be seeing the new types of capabilities brought to us very shortly.
Okay. I love it. Financial services at the point of need. I love the water analogy. That's great. That's made me think about it in a whole new way. Okay. Last question, Todd. Where do you see token in, say, 3 years? Right now, you're spread across, I think, the US, UK, and Australia. How does the company organization, how does its market share look like a few years from now?
Well, I believe we're currently a leader in providing open banking infrastructure. And I state that because we were the first ones live with payments in the UK, first ones live with all banks to deliver payments in the UK. Have access to 4,000 banks across the UK and Europe. We've got, I won't share the number, but large customers, many customers. There's some that we've announced. So MasterCard has selected Token to help power its access to banks. We'll be making an announcement in 2 weeks of another large entity that has selected Token. So, you know, I'd say we'll leverage that leadership position to expand across Europe. Especially with our large partners. And we will look to follow open banking as it happens around the world. So we are focused solely in the UK and Europe right now with a footprint starting in the Middle East, which is moving very quickly on open banking. So 3 years from now, I would see us being in, you know, many countries, probably not likely the US at that point in time. I think the US will probably take a bit longer to embrace this. And I expect that there will be 1, 2, 3 companies that really emerge as the dominant players providing access to banks. And, you know, Token with our coverage of banks, with our superior payments functionality, and with our developer experience and ease with which third parties can access banks, I think we have a very good chance of being one of those 1, 2, or 3 that really kind of emerge as this major infrastructure layer facilitating this access to banks.
Yeah, I agree. Amazing. Very excited to find yourself at the head of such a huge wave as well. Token's not been around for very long, and it's not a huge company in terms of headcount, but the position you're currently in is truly portentous. It could get very big indeed. So, very exciting for yourself, I imagine. You're going to have a great couple of years ahead. How do people get in touch, Todd? Could be job applicants, could be small company owners who might wish to partner with Token. Where should they be reaching out to?
Go to our website, www.token.io. Also, my email is todd.clyde@token.io. And happy to hear from banks, happy to hear from third parties looking to consume financial services differently, and happy to hear from applicants. So I'd say everybody check out the website.
Okay, fantastic. Todd Clyde, CEO of Token. Thanks very much for being on the show, Todd. It's been a pleasure.
Lewis, thank you for your time, and audience, thank you for listening.
Okay, great. Bye for now.
The Payments and Cards Network podcast is brought to you by our friends and sponsors, PayVision. PayVision, when it comes to payments, they don't mess around. They live and breathe payments processing, from design and integration to delivery and checkout and everything in between. Check out payvision.com. We are also brought to you by Block Data. Block Data is an Amsterdam-based cryptocurrency research firm. They help investors get involved in the world of cryptocurrency safely and securely. Check out blockdata.tech for more information about them. Thanks for joining today's show. We'll see you again next time.